This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran.
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran's broadcasting. The voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily via the internet address www.parstoday.com/en. You can also listen to the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Intelsat 902, and Eutelsat satellite, as well as via internet. You can also listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for more details.
And now we enlighten you with verses 162 to 165 of chapter Al-An'am from the Holy Quran, recited by Murtaza Fatemi.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. قل إن صلاتي ونسكي ومحياي ومماتي لله رب العالمين لا شريك له وبذلك أمرت وأنا أول المسلمين قل أغير الله أبغي ربا وهو رب كل شيء ولا تكسب كل نفس إلا عليها ولا تزر وازرة وزر أخرى ثم إلى ربكم مرجعكم فينبئكم بما كنتم فيه تختلفون وهو الذي جعلكم خلائف الأرض ورفع بعضكم فوق بعض درجات ليبلوكم فيما آتاكم إن ربك
In the name of God, the Compassionate, the Merciful. Say, surely my prayer and my sacrifice and my life and my death are all for Allah, the Lord of the worlds. No associate has He, and this am I commanded, and I am the first of those who submit. Say, what shall I seek, a Lord other than Allah? And He is the Lord of all things. And no soul earns evil but against itself, and no bearer of burden shall bear the burden of another. Then to your Lord is your return, so He will inform you of that in which you differed. And He it is who has made you successors in the land and raised some of you above others by various grades, that He might try you by what He has given you. Surely, your Lord is quick to requite evil, and He is most surely the forgiving, the merciful.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Now in effect in Yemen, the Ansarullah movement says it's committed to the ceasefire as long as the other party adheres to it. Anger boiling in the West Bank in the wake of Israel's deadly crackdown. The Palestinian Authority turns to the international community for support. Plus, Ukraine's top negotiator says Russia has verbally agreed to key Ukrainian proposals for ending the conflict. Welcome to the program. Yemen says it will commit to a UN-brokered ceasefire with the Saudi-led coalition as long as the other side adheres to it. Army spokesman Yahya Sari made the announcement in a tweet. According to the UN Special Envoy for Yemen, the two-month truce began at 1600 hours GMT. All offensive military operations, including ground, aerial, and naval attacks between the two sides will be halted under the ceasefire deal.
As Yemenis are marking the holy month of Ramadan, a new truce was announced by the United Nations Special Envoy for Yemen to help the humanitarian situation in the country. The parties agreed to a nationwide ceasefire for 2 months, in addition to suspending all sorts of aerial attacks from both parties.
The international community has become convinced that this unjustified and barbaric aggression against the Yemeni people must be stopped, and the violations and crimes left by the war are a disgrace to the international community. There are indications of the continuation of the truce, and we hope that it will be the beginning of a complete end to the war and the lifting of the siege on Yemen so that we can confront the humanitarian crisis.
The agreement includes opening Sana'a Airport for 2 flights a week from and to Egypt and Jordan only, and allowing Yemen's fuel ships to arrive at Hudaydah Port. However, observers say this agreement is the result of the recent attacks of Yemen's armed forces against Aramco facilities across Saudi Arabia.
I think, of course, those latest attack against Saudi Arabia and as well in the last few months against United Arab Emirates, it has forced Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates to accept this truce. But it will be really clear in the coming days and week, will they accept this and will they, because there have been many like agreement that has been signed as an example in Stockholm. But still at that time, because Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates were not part of this agreement, they have not signed signed and they were not mentioned in any of those agreements. That's why they have actually not respecting them.
In addition to the war, Saudi Arabia has been tightening the all-out blockade it imposes on Yemen and has prevented Yemen's fuel ships to enter the country. This has worsened the situation in war-torn Yemen, which is already going through the world's worst humanitarian crisis, according to the UN.
Despite the tragic humanitarian situation of their country, Yemenis say there has always been light despite all the darkness. They believe the UN brokered agreement may lead to a comprehensive political solution as the Saudi war must come to an end. Abdulatif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
Tensions running high in the occupied West Bank amid Israel's violent raids and deadly shootings in Palestinian villages and towns. Palestinians, mostly youth, hit the streets chanting anti-Israeli slogans. Ten Palestinians have been killed and dozens arrested in Israeli crackdowns that began earlier this week. Palestinian Authority has strongly condemned the killings and reiterated its call to the international community to provide protection for the Palestinians. Earlier, resistance groups, the Islamic Jihad and Hamas, issued strong warnings to Israel after its forces opened fire on a vehicle, leaving three Palestinians dead in the early hours of Saturday. Hamas described the killings as a cowardly assassination and said the regime cannot guarantee its security by killing Palestinians. Islamic Jihad identified the victim as its members and said that such atrocious acts will not go unpunished. Author and journalist Robert Fantino believes that a Palestinian Authority's security coordination with Israel gives the regime a free hand to commit crimes against Palestinians.
First of all, with the sacred month of Ramadan, more and more people want to be able to worship at the Al-Aqsa Mosque, and of course, Israel does not want this to happen. So they are, anything that is indicating more people going into Jerusalem, going to that area, is going to cause Israel to claim they have security issues, and they have to perform these mass arrests and these extrajudicial killings, which are completely unjust and completely in violation of international law. Additionally, the PA has said that, has condemned these killings, but that's hypocritical because Mahmoud Abbas is complicit in Israeli crimes against Palestinians with his so-called security coordination that his organization, the PA, has done with Israel for many years. If that security coordination were to cease, then the occupation would be much more difficult for the Israelis to maintain. But at this time, during this sacred month, these killings, these arrests, these night raids are even more appalling than they are under other circumstances.
People in the Gaza Strip are observing yet another month of Ramadan under tough conditions due to the inhumane Israeli siege. Ashraf Shannon has the details from Gaza.
Some 2 million Gazans are observing another holy month of Ramadan under the Israeli blockade for the 16th time in a row. Muslims around the world enjoyed this holy month while people in Gaza struggled to observe it under inhumane conditions. People in the tiny coastal enclave have limited access to food and they are also denied the right to freedom of movement. During this holy month of Ramadan, most Gazans are impoverished as their incomes continue to dwindle because of the crippling Israeli blockade.
The situation in Gaza, especially during the holy month, is very difficult. Poverty and unemployment rates are very high, and people can hardly afford to buy food to prepare their meals and break their fasting.
People usually shop for food items to prepare their iftar meals a few hours before iftar time, which takes place at dusk. Gazans, meanwhile, find it very hard to prepare their fast-breaking iftar meals due to the harsh economic conditions.
Ramadan is a wonderful month, but people are having a hard time because of the Israeli blockade. There is no purchasing power, and most people just walk around the goods while hardly buying anything.
According to UN reports, the majority of people living in the Gaza Strip are receiving some sort of aid to survive. unemployment and poverty rates have skyrocketed, and poor people have been getting poorer year after year.
Israel work against the international law. The siege is continued at the time we are in the beginning of Ramadan. Blockade means poverty. Blockade means high average of unemployment.
Experts say the Israeli regime has been fueling misery and suffering in the tiny coastal sliver.
Thousands of Gazan families can't afford to buy food to prepare their Ramadan meals amid the dire economic situation. They mainly blame the suffering on the Israeli blockade. Ashraf Shanan, Gaza.
Turning now to the conflict in Ukraine, where airstrikes have rocked the strategic port city of Odessa. Ukrainian air defense batteries are said to have intercepted some of the missiles that were fired at the city. The blast sent up columns of black smoke with flames visible apparently in an industrial area. Russian forces appear to be withdrawing from Ukraine's north, but Kiev warns that Moscow is consolidating and preparing powerful strikes in the south. That echoes a chorus of Western assessments that Russian troops are regrouping. Odessa, a historical city of around 1 million people, is Ukraine's largest Black Sea port. In France, election polls show that immigrant-residing suburbs have joined in the nationwide turn to the right. Working-class areas in general appear ready to join with rural voters in a rejection of the city-dominated mainstream parties. Ramin Mazahiri is in Paris.
In France, the suburbs around cities are known for being poor, immigrant, often Muslim, and for voting for the left. But a new poll shows that the far right has surged in popularity. At 42% of voter intentions, the far right has become as popular as the three centrist parties combined. It's now only the poorest areas of the suburbs where the stereotype of the so-called red suburb still holds. Overall, 60% of the suburbs are planning to vote for the two political extremes, in a major rejection of the two mainstream parties and President Emmanuel Macron's new party.
These areas feel abandoned by the city centers and the political elite there, so their turn to the political extremes is actually a protest vote. They have a desire to try a different type of politics, because they feel that in recent decades, things have only gotten worse for themselves and for France. After decades of alternating power, the mainstream parties are not coming back.
In 2017, the National Front's Marine Le Pen lost in a 66-34% landslide. However, the latest polls show a 53-47% race, which is now within the margin for error. Many Muslims say they are ready to do what was once unthinkable, vote for the far right. Analysts say that suburbs are now voting similar to rural areas and for similar reasons.
10 years ago, people may have voted based on identity issues, but this election is all about class. What we hear voters talking about is inflation, the loss of public services, and unemployment. Mainstream parties don't have a good record on these issues, which have been ignored in this campaign, making these voters even angrier.
The national turn to the right is based on pocketbook issues, but people may also have been persuaded by what's been on the nightly news all year long. France has embraced four essentially far-right politicians among their five leading presidential candidates, and the previous months have been dominated by open xenophobia and contempt for aiding the lower classes. In many ways, the Muslim vote may decide the election. If they join in the expected record abstention, that will ruin the surging chances of the left's Jean-Luc Mélenchon and ensure that a very right-wing president is elected on April 24th. Ramin Mazahiri, Paris.
At the end of a week-long talks with representatives of indigenous communities from Canada, Pope Francis has issued an apology for the abuses at the hands of the clergy that took place in residential schools for over 100 years. The pontiff has also pledged to visit Canada and meet with indigenous locals. Take a look.
On Friday, the head of the Holy See, Pope Francis, made a historic apology for the abuses by members of the Catholic Church against indigenous children that occurred in a span of over 100 years until 1996. In a final and public audience, the pontiff stood before a room filled with almost 200 indigenous delegates in the Vatican's Apostolic Palace, asking for God's forgiveness for the deplorable conduct of church clergy. At least 150,000 indigenous children were taken from their families and forced to attend Catholic-run boarding schools, where kids were forcibly converted to Christianity and submitted to physical, psychological, spiritual, and sexual mistreatment.
I also feel shame, and as I told you, I repeat it, I feel shame, pain and shame for the role that different Catholics, in particular those with educational responsibilities, had in all that hurt you with abuses and lack of respect towards your identity, your culture, and even your spiritual values. And I unite myself with the Canadian bishops in apologizing. It is evident that the contents of the faith cannot be transmitted in a way that is extraneous to the faith itself.
Pope Francis' apology came after a week of private separate talks with Canada's First Nations, Inuit and Métis Indigenous delegations. In 2015, a federal commission of inquiry into Canada's residential schools, known as the Truth and Reconciliation Commission, found that the Catholic-run system amounted to cultural genocide. Indigenous leaders are also urging the Catholic Church to distance itself once and for all from the so-called doctrine of discovery, a concept used to justify European sovereignty over indigenous lands and people. The doctrine, introduced in the 15th century, considers lands held by indigenous peoples to be terra nullius, a Latin term meaning land belonging to nobody.
Acknowledging that and acknowledging the doctrine of discovery is extremely important because this is the moment in which, you know, the colonization started for indigenous peoples.
Back when residential schools were first formed, the quote was to kill the Indian in the child. You know, this was the answer to solving the Indian problem as the government saw it.
I think that there's more work to be done, but I think that that's an important first step that was taken today.
At the end of the final audience, Pope Francis said he hoped to visit Canada possibly in July. Dini National Chief Gerald Antoine, who led one of the delegations, said Indigenous leaders should be part of the planning of such a visit, in which they expect the pontiff to issue a formal apology to Indigenous communities. Max Civili, Rome.
An Algerian man who was held at Guantanamo Bay prison for nearly two decades is now back in his country. The Pentagon says it was no longer necessary to keep the man at the U.S. base. Soufiane Barhoumi was detained in 2002. U.S. officials accused him of conspiring with Al-Qaeda terrorist group. According to the Pentagon, 37 more detainees still remain at Guantanamo. The notorious prison has drawn international condemnation for torture and abuse of inmates held without charge or trial. The number of prisoners at the facility peaked at nearly 800 under former President George W. Bush. Several U.S. administrations have refused to close the controversial jail that was set up in the wake of the 9/11 attacks. In East Asia, South Korea may face a serious threat owing to the remarks made by its defense minister. The stern warning comes from the sister of North Korean leader Kim Jong-un. Kim Yo-jong says the South's statement worsened bilateral ties and escalated the tensions on the Korean Peninsula. On Friday, the South Korean defense minister boasted about his country's military power, saying its missiles are able to hit any target in North Korea in a preemptive strike in case of clear signs of a launch toward the South. Tensions on the Korean Peninsula have been rising since last month, when the North ended a self-imposed moratorium on testing intercontinental ballistic missiles, which had been in place status since 2017. And finally, China has reported well over 13,000 COVID cases, the highest since the peak of the first wave more than 2 years ago. The highly transmissible Omicron variant has spread to more than a dozen provinces, but has not caused any deaths. In Shanghai, the epicenter of China's most severe outbreak, nearly all of its 25 million residents were under stay-at-home orders on Saturday as officials rushed to curb the spread. Shanghai's restrictions threatened to snarl supply chains. Some depots in the city remain closed, and trucking services would likely be hit further. Lockdown is likely to drag into late next week or longer.
What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. Please log on to our website www.parstoday.com/en.
On Sundays. In the name of Allah, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. In the name of Allah, from whom I hope for nothing but bounty, and from whom I fear nothing but justice. I rely only upon His word, and I cling only to His cord. In Thee I seek sanctuary, O possessor of pardon and good pleasure, from wrong and enmity, and from the changes of time, and the recurrence of sorrows, and from the striking of mishaps, and from the expiration of my term before preparation and readiness. From Thee I seek guidance to that wherein is righteousness and being set right. From Thee I seek help in that which is linked to success and favorable response. Thee I beseech for the garment of well-being and its completion, and for the covering of health and its permanence. I seek refuge in Thee, my Lord, from the goadings of the Satans. And I seek protection in Thy sovereignty from the injustice of the sovereigns. So accept my past prayers and fasting, and make my tomorrow and what is after better than my present hour and my today. And exalt me in my clan and my people, and protect me in my waking and my sleeping. For Thou art Allah, the best guardian, and Thou art the most merciful of the merciful. O Allah, I am quit before Thee on this day of mine and on all Sundays that follow it, of associating others with Thee and of heresy. And I devote my supplication sincerely to Thee, addressing myself to Thy response. And I observe the acts of obedience to You for the hope of Your rewards. So bless Muhammad, the best of Thy creation, the summoner to Thy truth. Exalt me with Thy exaltation, which is never made to suffer loss. And protect me with Thy eye, which never sleeps. And seal my affair by cutting me off from everything but Thee and my life with forgiveness. Surely Thou art the All-Forgiving, the All-Compassionate.
Ramadan, the month of opportunities. O you who have faith, prescribed is for you fasting, as it was prescribed for those who were before you, so that you may be God-weary. As we see, God-weariness has been mentioned as the wisdom behind fasting. God-weariness means protecting oneself against harms and dangers. Just as warriors hold a shield and wear armor to protect themselves against enemies, the faithful should also hold the shield of fasting to be immune against satanic temptations. Life without a specific goal is not a humane life. A mountaineer who wants to reach the summit should plan correctly so that he may not go astray or lose his life. According to the Noble Quran, the goal of human being is to reach God's proximity. God-weariness, or what is called taqwa in Islam, means understanding the fact that the entire world is the kingdom of God, and God is present everywhere. If we realize this fact, we will try not to commit a single sin. This is God-weariness. The first phase of fasting means abstention from eating and drinking and other carnal desires. It is a means for strengthening willpower against routine physical and carnal desires. If we were to always answer positively to our physical and carnal desires, they would never end and we would be prevented from the main goal of life. Ramadan is a practice for an orderly and lawful life. It helps to lead a rational life in which every desire is met to the extent that it will make the individual closer to his ultimate goal. This means a moderate life in which man has observed justice in his acts. This is a good step for setting up justice in society as well. Imam Sadiq, peace upon him, has said, God prescribed fasting to make the haves and have-nots equal. Dear listeners, Ramadan has arrived. This blessed month is called the month of God and is superior to all months. Its days, nights, and hours are the best of days, nights, and hours. And there is a night in this month which is better than 1,000 months. This night is called the night of Qadr or ordainment. According to the leader of the Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, Ramadan is a part of paradise in the burning hell of the material world. Indeed, God has done a great favor to let us enter this blessed period to be away from the worldly attachments and desires. Ayah 5 of Surah Hamd teaches us to say to God, You alone do we worship, and to you alone do we turn for help. This is read 5 times in daily ritual prayers. In fact, God wants to remind us repeatedly that we should only worship Him and appeal only to Him for help. In other words, nobody deserves to be worshipped, and nobody is able to meet our demands. God has granted us the blessed month of Ramadan to practice worship purely for His sake. The Noble Quran is the word of God to salvage mankind. Thus, it fulfills all needs of human society in the best way and guides them to the best way. If man applies reasoning and intellect, he will certainly find the right path in the Quran. That's why this heavenly scripture keeps guiding the hearts of those who look for truth. The Quran is the book of guidance for pure hearts and souls. This great book is a set of laws for regulating social life and gives instructions for every minute issue in life. The Quran is the source of honor and dignity for Muslims, provided that they put its instructions into practice. Mankind was developed in the first decades and centuries of Islam in many fields of sciences and ethics. Muslims soon became the torchbearers of knowledge and progress and founded the greatest civilization in the world, which kept shining for several centuries. This book keeps opening new vistas of knowledge for mankind if they do not fear to fathom its mysteries. During the rule of Imam Ali, peace upon him, a man had done an evil act and had to be punished. The Imam asked him if he could read any part of the Quran by heart. He recited one ayah of Surah Baqarah. So the commander of the faithful pardoned him as he had learnt the ayah by heart. This showed the status of learning the Quran in Islam, although Imam Ali, peace upon him, was very exact in punishing sinners. Ayah 185 of Surah Baqarah reads, "The month of Ramadan is one in which the Quran was sent down as guidance to mankind and manifest proofs of guidance and a criterion." Criterion here points to the fact that the Quran is the means of distinguishing between right and wrong. We hope to be able to benefit from the blessings of the Quran in this great month. If we abstain from sins and evil deeds, the Quran will definitely show us the proofs of guidance and enable us to distinguish between right and wrong.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
communique.
As Yemen marks the 7th anniversary of the beginning of the Saudi-led bombings, there's a silent killer in Yemen that no one is talking about, the blockade. The Saudi-led coalition has imposed a siege on Yemen, preventing fuel ships from docking in the port of Hodeidah. This has caused fuel prices to skyrocket. People can't afford cooking gas, electricity. The country's inflation has gone ballistic, and the poorest country on earth is being forced to pay hundreds of millions of dollars extra for fuel for absolutely no reason. Now, the Saudis claim that there is no embargo on Yemen. They say that Yemenis are free to import food and all sorts of commodities, but the part that they leave out is that they're not letting Yemenis import fuel. And when there are fuel shortages, the entire economy goes down the drain. Now, what I'm about to show you here is a presentation of my own independent investigative journalism in partnership with a Yemeni economist. He graduated from Oxford and worked at the World Bank. His name is Amir Al-Tiba, and he put together this report which shows the true extent of the Saudi embargo. This is the silent killer that no one is talking about, the silent killer that is destroying Yemen, and we're going to expose it right now. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique. So before we go any further, as I said, this is an independent investigation which we released on our own. All of the data in this report, which was put together by Oxford economist Amir Al-Tiba, comes from places like the United Nations, the World Bank, the IMF, and other international organizations. This is on purpose to avoid anyone accusing the report or the data of being biased. And actually, that leads to the numbers being deflated. These are conservative estimates. Now, this information is, of course, very damning to Saudi Arabia, to the United States, to its allies and its backers, and people will try to discredit it. They'll try to attack its integrity. So in order to avoid just that, the data has been sourced from purely unbiased, objective international association. So just a brief recap of the situation. Yemen has been at war for 7 years, right? It's March 23rd, 2015, when Saudi Arabia begins its bombing campaign. And as a result, Yemen is one of the poorest countries in the world. 17.4 million people, so the majority of Yemen's population, are food insecure. According to UNICEF, 20 million of Yemenis live in extreme poverty. Yemen experienced one of the world's worst cholera epidemics in recent history, with over 2.5 million cases. All the bombings, the famine, the disease, the destruction have led the UN to describe the situation in Yemen as the world's worst humanitarian disaster. Now, the majority of Yemenis live in areas that are controlled by the government in Sana'a. In the West, they often refer to this government as the Houthis or Ansar Allah. The Saudi coalition, on the other hand, support the government in Aden, which was deposed in a coup. Now, this is officially, it's the internationally recognized government, even though it lacks popular support. And that's who Saudi Arabia, that's who the UAE, that's who the United States have been backing. And it's in order to crush the Sana'a government, where, again, it's under their jurisdiction that most Yemenis live. This Saudi-led coalition have begun bombing Yemen. Britain and the United States have profited immensely from this genocide. They've sold Saudi Arabia literally hundreds of billions of dollars worth of weapons and provide them with training and logistical support. You know, just this January, the Saudis bombed a prison, killing 70 people. They even disabled the entire country's internet after destroying vital infrastructure in the port city of Hodeidah. Now this week, as we said, marks 7 years since the start of the bombing campaign. People gathered in Yemen to mark a national day of resistance and show their resolve, show their resilience in the face of all this adversity. And right now, you know, what people are talking about is the fact that Yemen hit a petroleum storage facility in Saudi Arabia belonging to Aramco. This happened as the Formula One Grand Prix is taking place. And of course, while the photographs and the videos from that certainly make for interesting headlines and front pages, there is a much bigger story about Yemen that doesn't receive anywhere near as much attention. So let's say you're a fuel tanker, right, and you want to bring gasoline or you want to bring diesel to Yemen to sell it. Well, what do you do? First, you need to obtain permission from the United Nations Verification and Inspection Mechanism for Yemen, UNVIM. So this was set up to inspect vessels and their cargo. Ships headed to Yemen, they got to stop first in Djibouti. And once they pass inspection, they're issued a clearance certificate. Now, the issue is that right before they get to Hudaydah, to the port city of Hudaydah in Yemen, the Saudi Navy start detaining these ships, despite the fact that they already have clearance from the UN, right? So once they get close to Yemen, the Saudi Navy stops them and they take them to the so-called coalition holding area in the Red Sea. Now, obviously, randomly detaining ships voids the entire purpose of the UN verification. And not only that, but by detaining these fuel ships, the price of fuel goes up. Because if you fail to offload a ship's cargo, that prevents the owner of the ship from using the vessel to do other business, right? So they start losing money. And then you have to pay the owner of the chartered ship a fine. This is also known as a demurrage cost. And so in 2020, the total amount of demurrage fines because of the Saudis detaining fuel ships on the way to Yemen was $85 million. The next year, in 2021, it was $24.5 million. Now, at first sight, you might be thinking, well, that's an improvement, right? $24.5 million is a lot less than $85 million. But no, you'd be wrong. It's not an improvement. As a matter of fact, the situation got worse. In 2020, a gasoline or diesel ship would be delayed for around 61 days on average. In 2021, a ship could be expected to be detained for 85 days. So the annual average demurrage costs for just one vessel went up from $1.14 million to $1.65 million. That's a 44% increase from 2020 to 2021 on average for every ship. And who pays for this in the end? Yemenis. Yemenis, of course, at the market, at the pump. And so the only reason that the total dollar amount of demurrage fines went down from 2020 to 2021 is ironically because less ships started coming into Yemen, right? People became reluctant to even attempt bringing fuel there because it's just so difficult. So many vessels that were originally planning to go to Yemen ended up going back or docking instead in neighboring countries and selling their cargo there. And so you can see from this table how year by year, the costs get higher and higher. In 2019, the annual average demurrage costs per one ton of gasoline is around $16. Then $49 in 2020, then $165 in 2021. So in 2019, you know, a gasoline ship would be held for 23 days on average. And then in 2021, 219 days. I mean, think about that. That's almost an entire year that a fuel ship is not allowed to move, not allowed to offload its cargo. And in some cases, there are indeed ships that have been held over a year. 219 days is just the average. And so once the ships actually reach Yemen, it gets worse. Because with this blockade, they can't go to Hudaydah port, right? So instead, they have to go offload their cargo either in Adan or in Mukalla. So in ports that are under control of the Saudi-backed government. Now, not only are these ports further away from Hudaydah, but they also slap the fuel ships with higher costs. The customs fees, commissions to the refineries, security fees, intermediary office fees, higher transport costs, transport damages, all of this adds up like you would not believe. And so if you look at the table, you see that in November 2021, this adds up to $410 extra for every ton of gasoline and $317 extra for every ton of diesel. Okay, so that's we're talking $410 for every ton of gasoline, $317 for every ton of diesel, extra than if they had just gone to Hudaydah. So again, just look at this detour, because once the fuel trucks get going from Hudaydah to Sana'a, it's just 226 kilometers distance. Or let's say Aden to Hudaydah, which is usually a 430 kilometer drive. But now, the fuel trucks have to take this enormous detour. So this obviously increases the cost of transportation so much because the trucks have to travel a further distance, increase their fuel consumption, and other incurred fees and potential breakage costs. So again, just to recap, the fuel ships come to ports controlled by the Saudi-backed government. They have to pay higher taxes, then higher transportation costs because the journey is longer. And on top of that, you have the roadblocks. So all along this yellow route, You have various militias, various armed groups, including Al-Qaeda, that set up checkpoints. And so when the fuel trucks try to pass, they shake them down for money, right? If the drivers don't pay up, they get killed. And so other militias that are also affiliated with the Southern Transitional Council are involved. You know, one checkpoint will add 5% to the pump price, another 10% here, another 5% there. And so you've got about 50 checkpoints with groups that are looking to make a quick buck. And who pays for this? Again, it's the Yemeni civilians who have to pay the cost, the incurred cost at the pump. So because of all these obstacles, because of this embargo, you know, people are discouraged to bring fuel ships at all to Yemen. So in 2020, you had a total of 73 ships that brought fuel to Hodeidah. The following year, 5 ships. 5 fuel ships came to Hodeidah in 2021. That is a 60% decrease. Do you know how many fuel ships have come so far to Hodeidah this year in 2022? One. Literally just one. So not only is the fuel in Yemen more expensive, but it's not even enough. It doesn't suffice. And so when it comes to oil derivatives, there was a deficit of 49% in local consumption. Okay, so what does that mean? That means that Yemenis only consumed half the oil that they actually need in all of 2020. Okay, so in 2020, Yemen needed 1.3 million metric tons of gasoline. They only got half, a 49% deficit in gasoline and diesel. In 2021, a 90% deficit, 90. So even if Yemenis could afford the oil, there's not enough coming in. And so like all countries that are impacted by sanctions, this embargo has led to the creation of a black market. And while the official prices for oil are low, well, there simply isn't any oil to sell. That means that consumers have to turn to the black market, where price gouging is rampant. People are forced to pay several times over what they normally would out of pure necessity. So just to give you an idea how bad this is, during the first 5 months of 2021, the price of oil on the black market went up 90% each month on average. So again, look at this graph. You can see the monthly average of gasoline prices in Sana'a per liter per riyal. And you can see the monthly average of diesel prices as well. And so in the first 5 months of 2021, the price on the black market, which is in red, it just climbs and climbs and climbs and keeps climbing. Now you can imagine what this increase, this steep increase in fuel prices ends up doing to the people in Yemen, to Yemen's agriculture, Yemen's industry, Yemen's service sectors. This also means that you end up with oil derivatives that are of poorer quality because they're not controlled by the authorities. So they not only cost more, but they're also damaging the environment. They're damaging the consumers. They're damaging property and equipment. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back after this short break.
Communique is a program in which Richard Medhurst, the independent journalist and political commentator, gives his views of controversial issues of our time and interviews famous politicians and personalities. This program is broadcast every Sunday by IRIB English Radio.
Amir El-Tibah is the Yemeni economist who compiled all of this data, who did this brilliant job. He helped me put together this report. Amir studied in the United Kingdom. He's an Oxford graduate, and he used to work at the World Bank. He's been a country economist for almost 30 years now. He's based in Sana'a, and we spoke earlier about this report and the effects of the siege in more detail. Amir, thank you for coming on the program and taking the time to sit down and go through this with me. I really appreciate it.
It's always a pleasure and honor to speak to you.
Amir, let's start from the beginning. Let's explain the chain of events. Basically, there are ships that are carrying fuel coming to Yemen, but they don't actually come straight to Yemen. They get stopped first. Why do they get stopped?
First, we will have to say, I mean, this is commercial imports are done by the private sector. So the public sector here, the government, have no foreign reserves or have currencies, and they cannot finance the import bill. So everything has to be done through the private sector. And then, in order to qualify or to be able to submit or to purchase a fuel vessel, you have to first pay for the 100% in advance for the cost of the shipment. Once the importer overcomes these restrictions, the fuel will be purchased from the UAE. This is the facts that kept from the public. Once the fuel departs from UAE and heads to Yemen, to Hodeidah port, it gets redirected to Djibouti port, where the fuel has to be inspected and verified by the UN verification inspection mechanism. This is a new body, a UN body, which was created as a result of the Security Council resolutions. And there, the fuel and the entire the paperwork for the vessel and the content of the vessel will be inspected. And after that, once the fuel is inspected and cleared by the UN, the fuel would leave the port of the vessel would leave the port of Djibouti, heading towards Hodeidah. And there, the vessel will be stopped and detained by warships of the coalition, and then taken to attention area near Jazan port in Saudi Arabia. There, there is always an excuse or a justification for why ships are detained. Each day would cost, would add $20,000 worth of delay or demurrage fees onto the final cost of the fuel. Some of them are permitted to enter Hodeidah eventually, but then only when the cost, the total cost of the fuel is much, much more than the real cost of, that day. This had huge consequences on the prices. I mean, we've had a severe fuel shortages and very flourishing black markets for smuggled fuel throughout, I mean, during the conflict since 2015. But last year, the problem became much, much worse. To put it in figures, last year, only five ships were allowed to enter Hodeidah eventually throughout. I mean, five fuel vessels of diesel and gasoline.
So basically, you end up with a situation where the necessary fuel consumption for the whole year, only a tiny fraction is actually coming through Hodeidah, but the majority is coming through the land ports, right? And who controls the land ports?
This was not very common before 2021, but since 2021, suddenly, because vessels would not be allowed to enter through Hodeidah, and then this would eventually create so much resentments and frustration by the public. In addition to the suffering and shutdowns and suspensions by several sectors in the economy. So eventually, I think starting from April last year, the authorities here started to regulate and allow fuel supply from Aden and from other ports controlled by the government in Aden. Eventually, this the additional cost added onto this fuel was not big, but it just gradually increased and became bigger and bigger until now. The added cost amounts to almost 60% more than the cost of fuel imported through Hodeidah.
Right.
So this is an additional inflationary effect, which has an impact on everything. But also because of the inflated cost of transport and because of this roadblocks, where each fuel tanker will have to be stopped and will have to pay informal levies to mostly armed militia groups. Some are affiliated with the government in Aden, some are not. And this is not, I mean, this is not really shocking or surprising or a new phenomenon. I mean, we've seen this in South Sudan, we've seen it in so many different countries. It's really it's financing and providing finances to armed groups, which will definitely prolong prolong the conflict and fuel violence throughout Yemen.
So does that include Al-Qaeda as well?
Absolutely. I mean, this is not. I mean, this has been recognized and publicized by activists in the north and the south.
In the report, we saw that in 2021, the direct financial losses because of this increase in oil prices and oil derivatives, you know, gasoline and diesel, was $644.4 million. So, I mean, just to get this straight, does that mean that people in Yemen in 2021 they paid an extra $644 million, or because of this increase in oil prices and the lack of oil, it caused the infrastructure and the state and businesses to lose money? Just to be clear,
this is how much the population, not the entire population even. I mean, this is how much the population under the in areas and markets controlled by the Sana market, we're talking about 25 million, between 23 to 25 million people paid, as an addition on their fuel prices. So this is not counting the damage estimates or financial losses, indirect or indirect, suffered by the economy or the infrastructure. This is how much the citizens of the poorest people in the world had to pay extra to get their fuel in 2021.
I wanted to talk to you about the difference in prices. We can see how in Riyal, the price of oil and oil derivatives is completely wild. We have a Su'al Aswad, which is the black market. We have Tijara, which is the private sector in this case, and then the Rasmi, which is the official price. My understanding was that the official price, it stayed low for as long as it could, but there's no oil. And then in the black market, there is oil, but the price skyrockets, of course, and then you have a lot of people making money off of that, right?
Yes. So the official price, this is for fuel imported through Hodeidah. And this is the most affordable and source for fuel, even before the current restrictions. The commercial fuel or the commercial price is for fuel which is sourced from the port of Aden or Mukalla. So this is supplied by land, but imported by the private sector through the port of Aden or other ports controlled by the government in Aden. And just to add another fact, now the blockade and this inspection and verification mechanism for Hodeidah port, this is only applicable for Hodeidah port. But if you are importing fuel or any commodities through other Aden controlled ports, there is no such a thing. So you don't have to go through this very long and costly process. You don't have to be detained. You don't have to pay extra money for delay. And the irony of this is that most of the smuggling, including smuggled fuel, comes from those territories that are not under any supervision. And this is just another aspect of this politicized blockade.
This siege has resulted in a decline in purchasing power of Yemeni households, who are now left unable to cover their basic necessities even more than before, from electricity to cooking gas. In Yemen, there are 0 hours of electricity. What most people have to get are solar panels or private grids, and the cost is astronomical. That cost is directly linked to the cost of fuel in the black market. In a statement, the Federation of Yemeni Private Hospitals said that, quote, blocking fuel from entering Yemen has caused the death of many patients in intensive care units, emergency and operations departments, as well as the hospital's inability to save and store medicines for chronic diseases. Now, every year a donor conference is held and all these countries get together. This year they actually couldn't even meet the goal that they had pledged to help Yemen. You know, they keep throwing money at the problem, but this doesn't fix anything. The inflation in Yemen has skyrocketed to not 1%, not 10%, 40% in 2021. Agriculture, industry, service sector, everything has been disrupted. Everything is more expensive as a direct result. And the Saudi-backed government appears to have a vested interest in blocking fuel shipments to Hodeidah. It gets to tax the population, and then on the flip side, provide Yemenis with nothing, right? They claim to be the legitimate government of Yemen, and they're in charge of all the reserves, the crude, the central bank, and yet they pay no public salaries. You know, they move the central back to Aden, but pay no salaries to public employees and servants. They pay no public salaries, but want to tax the population nonetheless. Now, there's no question, the bombings in Yemen need to stop immediately. And the aid is good, but it won't solve the crisis. What Yemen needs is for the siege to be lifted. This siege is man-made, it's completely unnecessary, and killing Yemenis on an unimaginable scale. Thanks for tuning in. I'm Richard Medhurst, and this is The Communique.
The Prophet's Sermon on the Advent of Ramadan. In the name of God, the All-Merciful, the All-Compassionate. Salam, dear listeners, and wish you lots of spiritual bounties on the advent of blessed Ramadan. Here we present you glimpses of the blessings of the month of fasting as outlined in a memorable sermon by Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny. Please stay tuned. In the book